So hello everybody, it's Susan. I am so incredibly excited to be able to talk to you in this way, and I'll be even more excited when you can speak back to me, which you'll be able to midway through this call. So thank you so much for signing up for the call and for joining. I'm going to assume that you are there, even though I can't hear anything, which is a very strange sensation. Nonetheless, I have faith. So the way it's going to work is I have the call set up so that only I can be heard. And that's because when I've been on conference calls in the past with a lot of participants and everyone is able to speak, there's too much ambient noise and it creates distraction and irritation and so forth. So you are muted right now. Midway through the call, when it's time to take your questions, I'm going to go into a different mode. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to talk to you about a few things. The first is just a basic reminder of what meditation is and what it is not, what the style is called that I teach and that we are practicing together and where it came from, just a short riff on that, a short riff on the three biggest misconceptions about meditation practice, a few tips for creating and maintaining your daily practice, and then we will sit together and I will give you the instruction as I have been doing on the videos, and we'll sit together in this funny way on a conference call, and then we'll have a question and answer session. And as I mentioned in the emails to set this up, I will keep it to 1 hour. So that's the story. So if you are listening now and holding a headset, if you're able, handset, I mean, if you're able to put your phone on speaker or put on a headset, that will be good, because then when we're meditating, then you won't have to hold anything to your ear. So as we begin, please find a comfortable place to sit, because as mentioned, we will be meditating together, and so it will be good if you could sit on the floor or sit in a chair or how you would normally sit for your meditation practice, if possible. But just sitting down will also do. So, and my last reminder before I launch into the content is if you have questions and you would like to email them to me for me to see during the call because you're afraid you might not get heard, you can email them to me at susan@susanpiper.com, or you can tweet them to me if you have a Twitter account. And all you have to do is tweet your question and then use the hashtag, which is the pound sign, and then the word Susan Piper, all one word, and I will see it. Okay, without further ado, people have many ideas about what meditation is and what it will do for us if we undertake it. And if you look at the advertisements or television shows or movies that use meditation or meditators, you know, you often see people that look, you know, very blissed out or like they have no concerns whatsoever, and they also happen to look young and attractive and thin. So maybe some days we feel like we are those things and some days we don't. But in any case, all meditation is, there's nothing mystical about it. There's nothing otherworldly about it. There's nothing woo-woo about it. All meditation is substituting for your mind stream another object of attention. And that may sound weird, like, well, what else can you think about besides your thoughts? But we all know, if you've ever done anything like take a long drive or go to a yoga class, or if you enjoy cooking or knitting or swimming, we all know what it's like to put our attention on something else primarily rather than our thoughts. You know, there are certain things that we do in this life, like driving or swimming or cooking even, that if we take our mind off of what we're doing, something could go wrong. You know, we could inhale water or put in too much salt or take the wrong turn. So there are certain activities that require that we place our mind on them thoroughly. And we tend to find the things that fit into this category to be very relaxing. And that's because, according to ancient wisdom, you know, whether Buddhist or yogic, things that synchronize your mind and your body, i.e. require them to be in the same place, rather than running off in two different directions, like your body's doing one thing, but your mind, like sending email, but your mind is doing something else, thinking about lunch or what have you, those things cause stress. So all meditation is taking our mind off our thoughts as our primary object of attention, and placing it on something else instead. In some traditions, that something else is an image, like of a mandala or something beautiful. In other traditions, that something else is a sound, like people chant Om or something else. In our practice, the practice that we do, that something else is your breath, which is conveniently located wherever you happen to be. So all meditation is, to recap, is substituting for your mind stream, which chatters on and on, awake and asleep, another object of attention, and through the synchronizing of mind and body, by placing attention on your breath, tremendous relaxation is created. It's very, very simple. I'm not saying it's easy, but the principle of meditation is extremely simple and straightforward. So that's all it is. What it is not is a way of finding bliss, although that may happen sometimes, but that's not, you know, what it's intended to be. It's not a way of never getting upset. I have learned that through experience. And it's not a way of stepping away from your life and the things that trouble you. In a sense, it's a way of stepping in, jumping in even, with both feet. Which leads me to our next topic, which is the three biggest misconceptions about meditation. So please check each of these and make note. Have I thought this? I probably thought all of them today, because, you know, these are things that tend to creep up for all of us around meditation. However, nonetheless, they are misconceptions. The first misconception, misconception numero uno, biggest one. If I had a dollar for every time someone said this to me, I would be so rich. You all would be rich, because I'd have enough money to give away to you all, too. That misconception is that meditation requires clearing the mind of thought. Meditation means ceasing thought, stopping thought, altering thought so that you only have good thoughts. None of these things are true. Meditation does not mean clearing the mind of thought. So if I could impart one thing to you today or in your life about meditation, that would be it. That you do not have to have a calm mind or a clear mind or an empty mind to be the world's most fantastic meditator. I mean, think about it. Our minds are going 200 miles an hour all day long and even all night long sometimes. And to sit down and say, stop, to all of that is a recipe for, I'm not going to say disaster, but for tremendous discomfort. It's akin to jumping off the train of thought that's going 200 miles an hour and standing in front of it, waving your arms, going, stop, 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 you know, whereupon you will definitely get smushed. So we don't want that. Instead, what meditation is relative to your thought, it's not stopping the train, it's not slowing the train down, it's not changing trains. It's just sort of, with a very light touch, hopping off the train and taking a seat, you know, perhaps on a grassy hillside and watching the train go by at whatever speed it wants. So please know that you do not have to change the way your mind works to meditate. In fact, trying to do so is antithetical to the practice. So don't do that. Clear your mind of that thought only. The second biggest misconception is that meditation is a form of self-improvement, that if I undertake it, if I add it to my to-do list as a way of creating more happiness for myself, you know, obviously there's nothing wrong with that, or as a way of making myself into a better person, one who's more patient or more kind or, you know, less depressed, or as a way of improving anything, it will not work. It so happens that a committed and regular meditation practice does bring you these extraordinary things that I just listed. But the sort of funny catch-22 is that if you practice with an agenda, it shoots you in the foot. Instead, meditation is like jumping off, another jumping off metaphor, the self-improvement treadmill that most of us, all of us, I dare say, have tethered ourselves to with a very tight rope. I need to be smarter, prettier, thinner, more intelligent, richer, kinder, you know, whatever it is that we are saying to ourselves all day long. I don't know about you, but when I tune in, I notice that there is an almost continuous litany of self-criticism going on in this little mind. And instead of giving it a louder voice, meditation is a way of saying to yourself, me saying to myself, even if it's just for this 10 minutes of practice, my practice is going to be, I am okay just in this way. I'm going to be with myself, the parts that I think are okay and the parts that I think suck. Exactly as I am, I'm going to be with this being fully and wholeheartedly and with a tremendous sense of friendship. So, to reiterate, the second misconception that meditation is a form of self-improvement, no, it's almost the opposite. Not that it's a form of sort of self, indulgence. It's instead a form of friendship, of acceptance and kindness towards yourself. And the third biggest misconception, and I'm very sorry to tell you this one because I personally held out the longest on this one, is that it makes you a more peaceful person. You know, when you see the pictures of meditators and ads or whatever, they look pretty peaceful. However, my experience and the experience of others that I've noticed is not necessarily that it makes you implacable, meaning someone who is untouched by the circumstances of life. It does, in fact, the opposite. It makes the circumstances of your life touch you more deeply, more thoroughly, more precisely. So rather than implacability, meditation turns you into someone more authentic, someone who, your authentic version of yourself. It doesn't turn you into anyone else. It makes you who you are. It introduces you to your life. It introduces you to the full spectrum of emotion with confidence and faith that you know how to return to center. So, just to recap that last one, instead of making you a more peaceful person, I'm happy slash sad to tell you that it makes you a more alive person. So what we're going for here is not untouched, it's genuine. And meditation is custom made for that. So a few tips for creating a daily practice, and then I'm going to give you the instruction and we're going to practice together, and then we'll go to the Q&A. If you're just joining us, that's the recap so far. There are three things that I'm going to say very briefly about how to create and maintain your daily practice. And P.S., all of this is on my website. I've said, I think, all of this on the little videos that I've made. It's been very, very fun to do that, by the way. And all of this is being recorded, so don't worry about catching all of this, or if you think you've missed something, it is retrievable in all manner of ways. So the first and probably most important thing about creating a meditation practice for real is to be reasonable about what you ask of yourself. In other words, it's not a good idea to say, yes, I get it, meditation's a great idea, I am going to practice it every day for the rest of my life, for an hour, or 20 minutes, or whatever you might say. That is a prescription, I'm going to mix my metaphors here, for a one-way ticket to Palookaville. You will not be able to make it be very difficult for you to return from this Palookaville, which is not a good place to be, in case you've never seen on the waterfront. Instead of saying to yourself, yes, meditation, I will do it every day, say to yourself something more along the lines of, yes, meditation, probably a good idea. What can I do? I think I can meditate for 10 minutes a day, Monday through Friday, for 1 month, not forever, or 2 weeks, or whatever you think is reasonable. At the end of that period, I'm going to reassess, and I may stop. I may cut back to 5 minutes. I may increase to 20 minutes. I may renounce this existence and become a monastic. I may cut back to 3 days, or up to 7 days, or you get the idea. So be reasonable about what you ask of yourself. The only thing worse than missing a day, say, if you have decided to practice on a regular basis, is beating yourself up for missing a day. That does not help, my friends. I know, I've tried it. Tried it many, many times, and I'm here to tell you, it does not help. So, number one, be reasonable and set up a schedule for yourself that is doable. Not super easy, like you can do it in your sleep, but if you think you can do 5 minutes a day, do 7 minutes a day. And then at the end of some time period, 2 weeks or a week or a month or whatever you decide, mark that day on your calendar, look back over what it's been like, and make a decision about what you want to do next. So the second suggestion for maintaining your practice is to be consistent, meaning practice. I'm just checking the time to make sure I'm not going rambling on for too long. Okay. Be consistent. In other words, 5 minutes a day, 7 days a week is way better than 60 minutes once a week. So short, regular practice sessions are more fruitful than less periodic, longer sessions. So try to be consistent. And that also means, if you can, to be consistent about the time of day. There's nothing magical about that. It just seems easier to ingrain a habit like meditation when you do it when you wake up, or you do it after you've had your first cup of coffee, or you practice in the evenings. Most people find it easiest to get their practice done in the morning, but some people find that horrific, or night owls, and they'd much rather practice when they come home from work or when they go to sleep. So there's no right or wrong. The only right one way is the way that you will actually do. And then the third tip for maintaining your practice, and I sort of already alluded to this, is to be gentle with yourself. To stick to your schedule. I'm not saying take it lightly or be casual. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that when you screw it up, because you will, because I do, you do, we all will, don't go, oh, well, no big deal. But also don't go, I am a horrible person. I have messed this up. I never do the thing I say I'm going to do. Don't shame yourself. Shaming yourself is not useful. Or shame yourself, but for 30 seconds. You know, set a timer, and after 30 seconds, stop shaming yourself. So be gentle with yourself. Set up something that you can do. When you mess it up for a day or two, or a week or two, or a lifetime or two, forgive yourself immediately and start over. So those are the things that I wanted to tell you. And now I'm going to give you the instruction, and we're going to practice together for a short period. So please take a moment and find your meditation posture. I'm assuming that you all are still there. Take a comfortable seat. If you're seated on the floor, hang on a second. If you're seated on the floor, sit with your legs crossed loosely in front of you. And if you're seated on a chair, try to scoot forward so that your feet are flat on the floor, and if possible, your back is not leaning against anything. Except if that hurts, don't do it. So the basic idea there are three kinds of mindfulness that go into a meditation practice. And the first is mindfulness of body. So the practice actually begins with the way you take your seat. And it simply means to sit up straight. You don't see meditators necessarily lying down, although someone had a question about that, and I'm going to get to that, or slouching, or just hanging out, or looking like they're daydreaming. There's a kind of uprightness and elegance in the posture. So the most basic point is to sit up straight, but not straight like someone just told you you've been a very bad boy or girl. Now sit up straight, not that kind of straight. It's straight, but relaxed. My very favorite metaphor is to sit up straight like a tree is planted in the ground. And if it helps, you can imagine that you too are planted in the earth up to your waist. And everything below is your root system. And it holds you in place without question and without aggression, without strain. It's a kind of naturalness to this posture. And up from your root system, like the trunk and limbs of a tree, blossoms your trunk and your limbs with a sense of sort of reaching up and also being very responsive. So trees are firmly planted. We don't often see them getting up and walking around. Nonetheless, they are also responsive and vital and alive and here, just like you, rooted and vital. There should be those qualities in your seated posture, whether you're on a chair or on a cushion. There's no preference. So please connect with that. The hands are palms down, just above the knee or at mid-thigh. And the arms are just relaxed. They're not holding you up or pulling you up. They're just resting. And let your belly relax a lot. And let your chest and shoulders relax too. Feel the strength of your back and tune in also to the softness of your front body. And notice the inseparability of your strong back and soft front. We can't tell where one ends and the other begins. And know that just in this way, you too are strength and softness themselves, inseparable. The chin is tucked a little bit to bring an additional sense of length to the back of the neck. And the eyes remain open, and the gaze is cast down to a spot about 6 feet in front of you, and it does not matter what's in that spot. I don't know about you, but I spend all day doing what feels like reaching out with my eyes to see what is on this screen or that screen or this person's face or that person's face, always trying to read something, detect something, capture something with my eyes. This is not that kind of looking. Please imagine that you could allow your eyes to drop back like a centimeter in the sockets. Let them rest back. While vision simply streams forth from the eyes, and there's more of a quality of vision mixing with space without preference, rather than trying to target any particular spot or thing in space. So there's almost a sense of looking in as much as looking out. The next time you see statues of Buddhas, look at the eyes when the eyes are open. There is very much a quality of inwardness to the gaze. So, the eyes are soft. The crown of the head reaches up a little bit. Like if you reached up just a half an inch, you would touch the sky. So there's this simultaneous sense of rooting down through the sit bones and reaching up through the crown. And in this way, we human beings, just by sitting down on this earth, unite heaven and earth through this simultaneous rooting down and reaching up. We connect heaven and earth in our bodies. And this is mindfulness of body. So now, please place your attention on your breath as it flows in and out through the nose. And placing attention on thought is different than thinking about thought. You're simply noticing your thought, your breath. By coming all the way in with your attention on the in-breath, and see if you can spot the very moment it turns into an out-breath, and then allow your attention to ride out on the exhalation all the way. Don't abandon the exhalation. And then notice the little gap at the end of the exhalation, and then just wait and watch while the next inhalation arises on its own. And start again. There's pretty much nothing you have to try less hard to do than this. Let each breath tell you what it is. There's no need to breathe in any particular way. There's no right way to breathe. Instead, watch each breath. Try to see how it may be different or the same as the one that came before. Just be with your breath. Let it lead you. And that is mindfulness of breath. It could happen at some point that your attention becomes absorbed in thinking rather than breath. That is not a problem, my friends. Do not worry about that. All you have to do, the moment you notice that your attention is absorbed in thought, is to let that thought go and gently, that's the most important word of the whole conversation, gently bring your attention back to your breath. And please believe me when I tell you that it does not matter if you have to do this 1,000 times or 2 times or 0 times. Well, 0 times would be kind of cool, but 1 time. All that matters is that at some point you notice that your attention is not on your breath. It's absorbed in your thought. And it doesn't matter whether that thought is brilliant or vicious or irritating or trite or dull or anything else. All that matters is that the moment you notice, you let it go. If it helps, you can say to yourself silently, thinking, as a way of cutting you're tied to that thought, and then coming back to your breath. And that is mindfulness of mind. So the practice involves mindfulness of body, which brings a sense of great stability, rootedness, and mindfulness of breath, which somehow creates a quality of peacefulness. And mindfulness of mind, which rouses the quality of tremendous, unspeakable, limitless spaciousness. So these three, stable, peaceful, and spacious, are who you are. They're not what you cultivate in meditation. It's who you already are. And meditation is simply an elegant reminder of that. So we'll practice in silence for just a few minutes. So hang in with me, with your mindfulness of body, breath, and mind. And please bring your short practice to a close by simply letting the technique go. Stop meditating. And come back. So this kind of meditation, by the way, is called shamatha meditation, S-H-A-M-A-T-H-A. And it means the practice of tranquility. And it is a practice that is more than 2,500 years old. It was said to be taught by the Buddha himself. And it has been practiced for millennia by countless people who have reported good effect. And that doesn't mean that it's absolutely the right thing for everyone. However, it does mean that it is a trustworthy practice that you can have confidence in. It is time-tested and proven. So, okay, I'm going to unmute you, I hope. I hope we don't screw this up, and we're going to go to the Q&A. So you may hear a little beep or music or something, but hang in there. Okay, everyone can now be heard. So will someone say hi to me?
Hi.
Hello.
Hi,
Susan.
Hi,
Susan.
Hi. Thank you. It's so weird talking, not knowing if anyone's there. Okay, so thank you very much. I was going to have you mute and unmute yourself, but I think that's too complicated. So I'm going to answer a couple of the questions that you sent to me in advance. And then if you have questions that you've tweeted or emailed, I'll look for them. But you'll also have a chance to just say, hey, I just thought of this question. Would you please answer it? And I'll be fine. Okay. Let me just pull up the questions. And I know there's a little more ambient noise right now, so if you are in a car, please put the window up, or if you're typing, please try to type quietly or what have you. Okay, so, and if you, this is your question and you're on the call, please speak up and let me know if this is a good answer. So, the first question I'm going to answer is this. I recently took a class from an instructor who taught a mantra type of meditation. I think you said in one of your videos not to mix meditation styles. Yet since I am still fairly new at meditating, I want to explore different methods to discover which is best for me. What are the benefits of a meditation style that focuses on the breath compared to a mantra style of meditation? So thank you for that question. It's an excellent question. Is the questioner on the call? And if so, can you say hello?
Yes, I'm here. That's my question. I'm Tim.
Hi, Tim. Okay, thank you. Very good question. So it's really great to try different styles of practice because who knows, maybe what I teach is your dream come true practice, or maybe you would go to a Zen center and that would suit your personality better, or maybe you would do a mantra meditation, which tends to be associated more with Hindu traditions, and that would suit you better. That's all good. At some point, however, it's very important to choose one style and commit to that, at least for a while, 6 months, a year, a lifetime, whatever makes sense to you, and stay with it, because they take you deeper. And if we try to mix them according to our mood, it's kind of like it, the practice doesn't have a chance to do its magic. So I'm totally good with trying different kinds until you find the one that you think resonates the best with you, and then stick with that. And further, in terms of mixing styles in an individual session, I advise against that. In other words, if you do some shamatha or breath awareness, some mantra meditation, don't do them both in one session. Sort of pick one and just do that one for the length of the session. Kim, does that answer your question? And do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, that sounds good. So maybe I could try the breath meditation for a week or so and just see how that works compared to a mantra style. And then, like you said, pick one, so one that keeps working. That's important.
That sounds great. Okay, cool. Thank you. I think someone is talking on the phone, or there's a television on or a radio or something, so if it's possible for someone to turn that down or to mute themselves, that would be great. So another question that I wanted to answer is, it's a question, it's easy for me to make the time and take the time for meditation, but not to adequately chase the thought chatter away during that time. So if you are the questioner and you want to identify yourself, please do. If you don't want to, it's okay. But if you would like to say hi, you're here. Okay. She actually knows who this person is. She said she might have to leave early. So as I mentioned in the beginning of the call, there is no need, no effort, no hope, no necessity whatsoever of chasing away thought chatter. Instead, we sit with our thought chatter as it is and observe it. You know, in practice, your attention is on your breath. That doesn't mean thinking stops. Obviously, it doesn't. It's going on constantly. This is about taking a different relationship to your thinking. So, most of your thoughts kind of flicker around the edges of your attention while you are focused on your breath. That's cool. You can stay focused on your breath while that little thought happens. Oh, I think I just heard a sound. Or I think I just noticed that I was hungry, or whatever it might be. Some lines of thought take your attention away completely. And those are the ones that we want to try to notice, not to shoot or stab or, you know, divorce ourselves from, force from ourselves. But notice that you're absorbed in a line of thought, and then let it go after you've noticed it and come back to your breath. So hopefully that's an adequate question for that questioner. And then another question that I'd like to answer, and then I'll see if you have any questions you want to pose, is what practice tips can you offer to counter drowsiness during early morning meditation? So I don't know if the person who asked that question remembers asking it or if they are here.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Hello. But there are two parts to this. Some drowsiness is just because you're sleepy. Most of us are sleepy because we're really tired. We work really hard and we don't give ourselves adequate chance to rest. So you could try to practice at another time of day in the evening, okay? Or you could make drowsiness part of your practice by noticing your drowsiness, placing your attention on it when you feel it, sort of gauging it. What does it feel like to be drowsy? Does it feel heavy? Does it feel spacey? Does it feel hot? Does it feel cold? Not why am I drowsy. What does it feel like to be drowsy? And then when you're ready, let that go and you put your attention back on your breath. And a third suggestion for countering drowsiness is sometimes it can be helpful, and this is a subtlety, a very subtle thing, when you're tired, to put a little more attention on your in-breath, on your inhalation, and a little less attention on your out-breath. Conversely, if you are too speedy, too anxious, too revved up, you could try placing a little more attention on your out-breath, on your exhalation, and that seems to have a little bit of a calming effect. So I have several other questions that I would really hope to and plan to get to. But before I do, I would like to ask you, does anyone have a question? And if so, please say it. Introduce yourself, say your name and your question.
Hi, Susan. My name is Don King. I'm from East Tennessee. I tweeted this question, but I'm not sure if I did it right. You commented a couple of times on the oddity of speaking and not knowing if anyone was there. And I'm really curious about what might be different in your experience from recording a podcast when you don't have an audience.
Oh, as opposed to talking to people?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as I've done similar kind of stuff in radio, you know, there's not an audience there. But I know there's a difference in doing that and doing a conference call. And I'm not just looking at the technicalities. I'm thinking about what's the thought process behind that.
Yeah, well, I just try to not differentiate. I try to pretend, you know, I'm just trusting that there are people listening. And I try sometimes to think of a person or several people who I really love and who I think would benefit or appreciate what I'm saying, and I try to imagine that I'm talking to them. And for me, if I can rouse a genuine quality of love in my heart or, you know, caring, then I have faith that my words will be useful.
Mm-hmm. Is that different from when you are meditating without making a podcast or doing a conference call?
Oh, yeah. When I'm meditating, when I'm just by myself, yeah, it's completely different. But it's just like for you all, when you meditate with others, you know, on a conference call with a lot of ambient noise, and I apologize for that, but there's nothing I can do about that. It feels different than sitting in your house by yourself, just as it feels different going to a meditation hall and sitting with others. They're just different qualities in the environment, and I think that's just those environments are different, but they change the way we think about things. So thank you for that. Another question that I would like to get to is, and I love this question, and I hope if you're on the line, you'll say hello. I'm going to just say it verbatim. So I used to be able to take short excursions into positive fantasies, which, though only fantasies in my imagination and consciously so, I found relaxing and having a positive influence. With the focus on the present moment, I have a hard time to give in to such fantasies. When I do drift off into them, I have a tendency of pulling myself right back into the here and now. I don't know for sure if this is a side effect of meditation and its focus on the present moment, or if it just came with age. In any case, it was something that used to work with me and had no harmful side effects whatsoever. And for all that meditation has added into my life, this is the one thing I regret that it might have taken away, is the ability to dream something that is not reconcilable with meditation. So anyway, I think the gist of the question is, I used to take little daydreams into happy possibilities, and now with my meditation practice, I'm training my mind to just constantly come back from things like that into the present, or it might not always feel so good. So is that a casualty of my practice? And so, you know, I think that's, is the questioner on the call?
Yes. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for that question. So what I would say is there's no problem at all with having these positive daydreams and with letting yourself drift into this kind of reverie of whatever it is that you are wanting, a life that feels better in whatever way. I have more time or more money or more love or more brilliance, whatever it is that you're drifting into, it's completely fine. The only time that it might become a problem is when you start to believe it, i.e., you don't realize that you're daydreaming, and you think that you are instead creating a reality. In other words, drifting off and having daydreams is totally fine, good, sweet, just know that that's what you're doing. What meditation does is help you create habits of precision in your mind and the ability to place your focus where you would like it to go. If you want to daydream, do it. But know that is what you are doing and allow your mind to do it. And when you want to stop, with a meditation practice, you can stop. So is that get at the gist of what you're wondering, questioner?
Yes, yes. Thank you very much for the answer. Yeah.
Okay. Good. I'm so glad. And hi to you, and I'm very pleased you had time to get on the call. I know you're very busy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad to be on the call, too.
Good. Do you have any follow-up
questions? Even though I'm sitting in my office.
Oh. That's okay. I'm sure you're not alone. I think others are probably sitting in their office or other busy places. So I have one more question that I want to address, and then if you have other questions, I would love to hear them. And that question is, with this style of meditation, is it okay, if you really feel your mind wandering, to use some type of self-guided visualization to get yourself centered again? So is the questioner on the call?
Yes. Hi, Susan. This is Roseanne.
Hi, Roseanne. I would just like to ask you to clarify, what do you mean by some kind of self-guided visualization? Can you describe that?
Oh, okay. What I meant by that was lots of my meditation practice in the past has been in a group setting where we're guided, you know, to sit there and visualize white light coming in through the crown, bringing it in through your body, and then bringing in golden light, violet light, and creating this sort of, energy going through your body. So I'm used to doing things like that, like more like of an active, engaging the mind kind of meditation. So that's kind of what I meant.
I see. Excellent. Thank you. That's very helpful. I appreciate it. So that is a different, what you described is a different, it's just a different kind of meditation. And I would suggest, as I suggested earlier, I suggest not mixing them. So here, if your mind is wandering in this style of meditation, that is not a problem at all. And it's not something that you have to go, uh-oh, that's something I need to correct. Instead, when you notice that your mind has wandered, you are right in the practice exactly as you should be. It's the noticing that your mind has wandered that is the key. And then you let that, wherever you wander to, maybe you wander to Tahiti or into your own kitchen or, you know, back into bed or wherever you wander to, you let that destination go and come back to your breath. And if/when you wander again, it is not a problem. We're allowing our minds in this way to relax and not try to conjure any kind of state of mind or ambient tone. And when we let go of efforts to create such ambient tones or states of mind, something extraordinary happens, which is that our innate wisdom automatically rises, and we have a chance to hear and see beyond our conventional thoughts. But we can't know what that wisdom looks like or sounds like from moment to moment unless we quiet ourselves. And in this allowing our minds to go where it will go, but then coming back to the breath when we notice, is the act of quieting self. And in this space, remember one of the three qualities, stability, peace, and spaciousness. With this spaciousness, your deepest wisdom comes forward. So the answer is, if you do the other visualizing, that is completely good. Do it. Absolutely. But don't mix it with shamatha. In shamatha, let all those techniques go and focus on your breath as the technique itself and when you wander to that. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely, and I have to say, when I heard you speaking earlier about the mantra meditation, I already had the answer to my question, but I really thank you for elaborating on it. Thank you very much.
Oh, good. You're so welcome, and thank you for the question and for being here. And then the final thing, actually, I already said the final thing, but this is the final thing. I don't have it verbatim for some reason, but somebody asked a very important question of, is it okay to meditate when you feel depressed? Like, is meditation for everyone? Or sometimes when she meditates, you go deeper into your depression. You feel it more. Is that good or bad? So that's a very important question. And the answer is no, meditation is not for everyone. And there are some times that even if it is for you, there are some times in your life where it may not be right for you. You know, depression is a very tricky thing. But leaving that aside for a second, if you're dealing with something, a psychosis or a significant mental illness, which depression can be from time to time, meditation is not a good idea. We all have bouts of depression, absolutely. And meditation can be very helpful, not in dispelling it necessarily on the spot, but in softening toward it. But it's for each of us to judge, and if we have a therapist or other mental health practitioner, I really suggest taking it up with that practitioner and getting their advice. For our everyday, you know, garden variety depression, which doesn't feel good, I'm not minimizing, that we all experience, meditation can be a strong ally. But when dealing with something deeper than that, it may not be that the same ally as when it was extreme. So, consult your mental health professional. So, that's my answer to that question. We have just a few more minutes. Would anybody like to ask or say anything about their practice that could hopefully be helpful with?
This is Lori. Can you hear me?
Hi, Lori. Yes, I can hear you.
Jen.
I didn't hear you.
Mine. I label it thinking. Easily send it away.
Lori, can I ask you to start over because you were cutting out?
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
When I'm meditating and I notice and send it out with, but I have a tune or a song stuck in my back and again and again. Any tip?
Yes. So you were cutting out, but I think what you said is sometimes when you meditate, it's like you hear a song in your head over and over again. It's like a soundtrack, and it just keeps popping up, and you can't get rid of it. Is that what you said?
Thanks.
Okay.
Yes.
So, okay, good. I know exactly what you're talking about. And so just like with anything, when we try to fight it, by saying, stop, go away, it just does not stand. It comes back, and it can be very difficult to just say, please stop singing. I'm not going to say any song titles, because the second I say it, I'm going to get it stuck in my head. It can be very difficult to say, please stop. So we have one of two options here. You can try that. You can say, look, stop, and just let it go and come back to your breath. And when it reasserts itself, you know, one nanosecond later, let it go again, come back to your breath. Nanosecond later, let it go, come back to your breath, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're meditating for 10 minutes at a particular session, that may be the whole meditation. If you're meditating longer, say 20 minutes, at some point you'll probably find it dissipate. With many of the irritants in our practice, although it may sound counterintuitive, the instruction is to practice for longer, because things tend to even themselves out over longer sessions, or your mind just gets tired and wants to go somewhere else. However, if you don't have time to meditate for longer, the second suggestion is to do the opposite, basically, of what I just said, which is to turn your attention to that song completely, and rather than making your breath the object of your meditation, i.e. the thing that you're trying to anchor your attention in, putting your attention on your breath over and over, and when it strays, come back, make the song itself the object of your meditation by placing your attention on it 100%.
And when your mind strays, when it's like, I don't want to think about that song anymore, I want to go somewhere else, stop and come back to the song itself. Make it the object of your meditation. In other words, for a few minutes or until you feel able to then go back to your breath. And this, by the way, works for pain. It works for difficult emotions. It works for anything that enters our consciousness that we absolutely cannot let go of. For whatever reason, good or bad, doesn't have to be good or bad reason. When you struggle with things, it's hard. Don't stop struggling. Instead, lean into them. Make them the object of your practice for a minute or two or five or ten or however long you need to until you are able to let it go. So, Lori, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. I can't wait to try it.
Excellent. If you think of it, give me an email and let me know how it goes. I want to thank you. I have gotten other questions on emails, tweets, and in advance of the call that I have not answered, and I will answer them directly and in my next newsletter or over the next couple newsletters, but without referencing you personally. So it will be anonymous. Don't worry. And if you had a question but you didn't get to ask it, again, email me at fiverr.com. And please know that I am so grateful to you and appreciative that you have taken the time to do this, and it is my honor. And I'm sitting here on a couch in Brooklyn looking out over the tip of Manhattan and the Statue of Liberty, and I've got my hands in Anjali, I've got my hands together, and I bow to you. So thank you, and goodbye for now.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye, everybody.